Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning will be Doctors Hospital of Hyde Park against LaSalle National Bank. Mr. Edelman.
Good morning, Your Honor. Judge Bauer, Judge Wood, Judge Sykes, good morning. I'm Howard Edelman. I'm here on behalf of LaSalle National Bank as trustee by a special service server, Oryx Capital Markets. Oryx supervises the trust administration of the loan. The trust filed a claim in the Doctors Hospital bankruptcy case for $64 million based upon a loan made in August of 1997. The claim was filed as a secured claim.
But, of course, that loan was not made to Doctors Hospital, right? The loan was made to the company, HPCH.
Your Honor, that's correct. The loan was the privity was made directly with HPCH LLC, which is an enterprise owned by Dr. Desnick. This entire enterprise, which is reflected in the complaint and on an exhibit to Judge Pallmeyer's opinion, starts with Dr. Desnick, who owned 100% indirectly or directly of all the entities.
No, well, we're aware that there was this network of entities that Dr. Desnick owned, but you would have to come to the conclusion that they were not actually separate. We'd have to do veil piercing and the like before we could even begin to talk about your claim.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, in the Bankruptcy Code in Section 102 provides that a claim against property of the estate is a claim against the estate. So the code gives some sort of privity, not 100% privity, but some sort of privity by the statute. And that comes into play when secured claims are parsed between secured and unsecured.
But in what sense was this loan property of Doctors Hospital? Certainly it was a guarantor, and that's part of this complaint.
Your Honor, the Doctors Hospital pledged its assets for this loan. We call that a hypothecation when a party that may not have privity pledges its assets to secure a debt of someone else's. So Doctors Hospital, the debtor, pledged its assets for a loan that was made to another company owned by Dr. Desnick. So that the reason that I was not counsel at the time the claim was filed, but the claim was in fact filed under that 102 of the Bankruptcy Code because there is a claim by statute. But the Bankruptcy Court has ruled that our claim is a non-recourse claim, and that is a development since the Desnick settlement. The reason why it's very important here, you bring out a point about the other company. What we challenge here is that for 4 years, the debtor in possession was in control. I'd like to refer to that respectfully as attorney in possession. Dr. Desnick.
Well, which is perfectly common in Chapter 11 cases for the debtor in possession.
Except when the debtor sues its shareholder. Now, you have Dr. Desnick, who's the shareholder and the director at the time of the bankruptcy, who approved the filing of the bankruptcy, hired the lawyer, and then allegedly resigned in November of 2000 after the bankruptcy was filed. But clearly, Dr. Desnick had the ability to fire, to replace the director and fire the lawyers. Now, it is true that the lawyers...
After the November 2000 or before?
Well, a shareholder, the corporate governance continues in bankruptcy. And as long as the shareholder doesn't exercise that power, that governance, for some improper purpose, a shareholder can remove a director during a bankruptcy, can remove management. The shareholder still controls the corporate governance, and this happened in United several airline cases, and it came up in Manville when the shareholders tried to challenge the case. Corporate governance, I think it's pretty well established, continues. But to some credit to the lawyer for Doctors Hospital, they did sue Dr. Desnick in 2002. But here's where it comes into what you were saying, Your Honor. They didn't sue Dr. Desnick for every bit of ammunition they had. They brought 317 paragraphs, but by their own admission in the transcript that you've read, they didn't bring all their claims.
But their account, though, was that they made a strategic decision because some of the theories that you think they ought to have advanced, which might have been favorable to your client, would have endangered the estate. So they made a trade-off. They didn't want to open up the estate to a whole set of claims that would have been possible depending on which insolvency date you chose.
I admit that it had a factor, But
I thought it was a very important factor if you look at the testimony.
The problem here, Judge, is that at the same time the lawyer was arguing that the $64 million should have been considered for the settlement, they were arguing to the bankruptcy judge that it's a non-recourse claim. And they prevailed in the bankruptcy
court. What do you mean the 64? I mean, they're trying to keep that $64 million, or actually the $48 million or so, the Nomura loan, let's call it what it is. They're trying to keep that out of the picture, aside from the guarantee, because they don't want to have to pay that $48 million. And so that was the decision they made. In reading their complaint, I don't think their complaint asks for anything about that loan.
In paragraph 57, it refers to the distribution of $46 million that Desnick took.
But it's not asking for that money back. That's a background paragraph.
No, that's the flaw. That's the flaw. The bankruptcy judge didn't investigate. The trustee didn't investigate. They settled the case with an artificially low ceiling on what Dr. Desnick should have been considered. This has to be considered in a settlement context.
For one thing, the district court judge said the ceiling doesn't really matter as long as you've got the floor right. And secondly, I'm not sure that your theory of ceiling really holds together.
Well, I suggest it does, Your Honor, because the same facts are pled, and the attorney for Doctors Hospital stated in the record that the same complaint could be not even amended, just recouched for the identical facts to bring an LBO leverage theory, to bring a consolidation theory, and as Judge Pallmeyer pointed out, an alter ego theory. And what I argue, Your Honor, is that the $64 million is a red herring. If we have no recourse, then it doesn't increase the universe of claims. If we have a lien on the settlement, which we contend we do and has not been adjudicated, we have a lien on Doctors Hospital's assets. The proof of claim and the documents attached reflect very specific assets on which we have a lien. And the bankruptcy judges have not reached that yet.
Can I ask you actually a question on the side? On page 25 of the Doctors Hospital brief, they say the claims against the trust alone will be tried before the bankruptcy court beginning March 20, 2006. Did that happen?
We had a 9-day trial starting on the the 19th or 18th of March, mm-hmm. on a fraudulent conveyance against the trust. Mm-hmm. So that now, that in arguing the $64 million claim should be considered in the settlement, Doctors Hospital is trying to bar that claim. And thus far, they have a decision of the bankruptcy court which holds our claim to be non-recourse. The law of the case is...
But that's already in these briefs. I mean, in this statement about March 20th, of course, not that long ago, so that's what I was trying to figure out how they relate.
Well, Judge Schmetter presided over that trial. Judge Doyle presided over part of this case.
Okay.
This adversary was transferred to Judge Schmetterer. We went to trial for 9 days on this. It's under a submission. We don't know what the result is, but it has taken place. But that's why this is so difficult, because on one hand we're arguing that the settlement was too low, and the trustee is arguing we had to do it that way because your claim would have diluted the creditor body. And
I don't think that's their argument. I think their argument has to do with the fact that if they were already insolvent, then a lot of these things would have been avoidable altogether anyway. And if they were still solvent, then Dr. Desnick's responsibilities would have been different.
They argued that, Your Honor, but for the purposes...
I thought that was their key argument, actually.
Suggest that their key argument is we didn't pursue an LBO theory, an alter ego theory, and other theories because we didn't want to increase the universe of claims. Now, I'd ask you, who makes that decision in a bankruptcy? Is it the lawyer? Is it the board of directors? Is it a judge? But a decision was made here between 2000 and 2002 to bring certain claims. And they didn't bring claims for certain reasons. We don't know them. And they were not vetted at the hearing on the settlement, which is one of our arguments. Why didn't the Doctors Hospital put all their ammunition on the table and then set a range for a discussion of settlement of $81 million and then talk about a low range? But they didn't.
Because they didn't think that was the range. I mean, as I understood the district court's opinion and the bankruptcy judge's opinion for that matter, they didn't see the Nomura loan as being within the scope and were afraid that if they suddenly were bringing in everything that Dr. Desnick had ever done, everything that all of his related companies had ever done, it would actually be on balance detrimental to the estate.
And we respectfully challenge that because...
But you're an adversary. I mean, you know, usually you don't ask your adversary how to run your own litigation.
No, but somebody should decide, a ship without a captain, which decides what lawsuits it brings and how it brings them. And here, there was nobody watching the store. There was an attorney who did a job, and he did a good job.
What about Judge Pallmeyer's finding that after he was brought in, the trustee evaluated this and thought it was fine? And
I'm glad you're... That's a major problem here. We have a case that goes on from 2000 to 2004. A trustee gets appointed, and I was point out on our motion, and does almost nothing in 60 days. And I'd like to read you, just the only time I would read from a transcript is when I think it's, but this is the testimony of the trustee. I view my role more as to confirm the process that occurred before and determine whether I saw anything that was truly unusual about the process that should cause it to be stopped, and I didn't. Now, Your Honor, I don't think that's what the bankruptcy code requires. One thing we know in the Seventh Circuit is a trustee in bankruptcy is not a common law trustee. A trustee in bankruptcy is a bankruptcy trustee. And that was Judge Bauer's case in Shippers, when someone tried to argue that a bankruptcy trustee had broader duties. In this case, all we wanted was the trustee to perform the duties the bankruptcy code vested in him. And he didn't. He jumped on the bandwagon. He adopted everything. He didn't hire special counsel to challenge what was brought against Desnick. Frankly, he did almost nothing but look at some discovery and talk with the debtor's counsel. That's not what the bankruptcy code requires when there's millions of dollars of creditors and when a shareholder takes $81 million of a company and 2.5 years later it goes into a bankruptcy.
Okay, I'm just going to say if you want to save any of your time for rebuttal,
this would be
a good time to
Thank
do
you.
It. Thank you. Mr. Fry.
I'm John Fry, representing the appellee, who is now Gus Boyne, the trustee. I really don't have much to add to what was in my brief, except to address a point that Mr. Edelman made, and that was the role of the trustee, which he categorizes as a major problem. If you read our brief and the record, you'll see that the trustee was very deeply involved in the whole process from the very time that he was appointed. And the quotation that Mr. Edelman was reading from was the trustee before the hearing. He used the process of the hearing itself to learn more about the case, to conduct more investigation, which he had already started. And that investigation included extensive discussions with counsel for the trust. But then at the end of the hearing, the trustee did fulfill his duties and approve the settlement.
But you might address a little bit of what Mr. Edelman was saying about the interest that Doctors Hospital had. I mean, I'll put it this way: Doctors Hospital's role in this Nomura loan, where not only is it a guarantor, that's something that's clearly challenged in the complaint, but also its assets are pledged as security for the loan. This is all a very interlinked set of arrangements, and I take it one argument that the LaSalle Trust is making is that that's enough to bring in that value for purposes of the assessment and settlement.
Well, we didn't see it that way, Your Honor.
I know that, but maybe you should have.
All we did was guarantee this loan. We had no obligation.
But you'd pledged your assets.
That's true. But we had no obligation to repay the loan unless the guarantee was called. The money was never in our hands. We just had no basis for a claim for fraudulent transfer. And the only other alternative was to have this, counsel refers to as a LBO-like claim. And for the reasons that you've talked about, we decided that that was risky and not in the best interest of the estate. So we did consider some way to try to get at that $48 million, but there was not a viable way to do it.
Do you think if this had been explored more, as Mr. Edelman clearly should have at the district court, and the possibility of adding in that value of the loan, the the low-end, high-end assessment of this settlement would have been the same and that it would still have been okay to have had this, you know, nominally $6.1 million or whatever it was region settlement?
It would, Your Honor.
Suddenly the number gets a lot higher at the high end.
But as you know, the test is the range of reasonable litigation outcomes, and as long as the low end stays the same, and it does, if the high end adds that $48 million, our $6.1 million is still within the range. So,
well, but can you think of other cases where the discrepancy between high end and low end has been on the order of, you know, a 60-1 or a 40-1 ratio?
I don't know of any offhand, but you know, I've looked at a lot of the cases to talk about the range of litigation, and the test seems to be a fairly straightforward one, and that is you look to see whether it's within the range. The size of the range doesn't appear to matter.
I mean, this test comes, I mean, Telesphere itself is a district court decision. I didn't spot anything that this court has ever done to adopt that test. Do you know of any such
case?
The
reasonable range of litigation outcomes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is a case, and the name escapes me right now. But there is a Seventh Circuit case that's cited in Judge Weedoff's opinion, which is quoted in both briefs, I believe. So, yes, this court has adopted that standard. I don't have any
questions. All right. Well, then, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The complaint is where we should again start. They set out in the complaint all the facts they would have needed to file an alter ego claim, an LBO claim, and recover the Numira proceeds, the $46 million. They had it in writing. Why they didn't bring it, I don't know. But it was there. And what really cries out about this is that Doctors Hospital and the facts, just on the, not even outside your record, Your Honor, what's in your record on the complaint, Desnick ran this company as his piggy bank. When he borrowed money from Daiwa, it paid four or five other companies' debts. When he borrowed money from Numira, he went through the HPCH LLC, as you pointed out, into his pocket. He put money in. He took money out. This was his piggy bank.
He claimed that they owed him money, though.
He can claim that all he wants, Your Honor. It doesn't take much to file a proof of claim in bankruptcy. It's a one-page document. But the records, when we went, part of this is a little difficult. We were on trial for 9 days, and I know the record of how it happened in 97, which is not in your record. But based on, that's why I stick with the complaint. The allegations in that complaint talk about what Desnick did. And even though we disagree with Judge Pallmeyer on the ultimate decision, she did seize upon the alter ego.
She
and in her
footnote
said
footnote, yeah,
that it was stronger than alleged by the by Doctors Hospital. But so I submit to you that when you look at this and you look at the complaint and you look at the range of a settlement, that it's very easy to say, well, this isn't a very strong case and this isn't a very strong and the range should be low. But what the debtor did here is adopt Dr. Desnick's theories 100% and said, well, therefore, the range is low range is $1.8 million.
But you don't seem to acknowledge that there would have been any risk to your position if Doctors Hospital had been insolvent for this long period of time.
Well, Your Honor, if that's when you compare what actually, when you go to trial, you get to defend solvency and insolvency issues, which we did for the last 2 weeks.
Right,
but
I mean, in a settlement, you've got to have evidence.
There was no evidence introduced at the trial on the settlement on solvency. There was talk by a lawyer.
Well, there was this but it's in there, right? This American Express study and the other studies.
American Express preliminary study. And by the way, American Express testified for 2 weeks that this company was insolvent back when Desnick was involved. And our expert, of course, testified it was solvent, and Judge Medderer will ultimately decide that. But as it relates to the settlement, the Desnick settlement, we're trying to find a range so that the judge can make an informed decision. And we suggest that the judge didn't force a higher range and wasn't presented with evidence. This gets down to what do you put before a bankruptcy judge to have a judge compromise?
You didn't produce any evidence either.
We don't have the burden. The trustee has the burden to prove. And we don't think they proved the range that was pled in the complaint. Had they tried to prove the range of $81 million to $33 million, this settlement would not have been approved by Judge Doyle. But because the issue of the $48 million wasn't brought in before Judge Doyle, was not included in the universe of rights. And by the way, the Doctors Hospital's lawyer in this called that exercise foolhardy. That's not what creditors deserve in a bankruptcy. They deserve a debtor in possession or a trustee to delve into, to investigate, to find the claims before they're settled.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.